He wipes the blood from Lale's body and gently pulls up his pants for him.
I'm so sorry, Lale.
He helps him to his feet, carries him back to his room, and lays him on his stomach.
You did good. You'll need to sleep like this for a while. I'll come back later with some water and a clean shirt. Get some rest now.
Over the next few days, Jakob visits Lale each day with food and water, and the occasional change of shirt. He reports to Lale the extent of his injuries, and that they are healing. Lale knows he will be marked for life.
Perhaps the Tetoviera deserves that.
How many times did you strike me?
Lale asks.
I don't know.
Yes, you do.
It's over, Lale, and you're healing. Leave it alone.
Did you break my nose? I'm having trouble breathing through it.
Probably, but not too bad. The swelling's gone down and it's hardly out of shape. You're still handsome. You'll still have the girls chasing you.
I don't want girls chasing me.
Why not?
I've found the one I want.
The next day, the door opens and Lale looks up to greet Jakob, but instead, there are two SS officers. They indicate for Lale to get to his feet and come with them. Lale stays sitting as he tries to compose himself.
Can this be the end? Am I for the Black Wall?
He silently says his goodbyes to his family, and lastly to Gita. The SS become impatient, step into his room, and point their rifles at him. He follows them outside on trembling legs. Feeling the sun on his face for the first time in more than a week, he staggers along between the two officers. Looking up, preparing to meet his fate, he sees several other prisoners being bundled into a nearby truck.
Maybe this isn't the end.
His legs give out, and the officers drag him the remaining short distance. They throw him on, and he doesn't look back. He clings to the side of the truck all the way to Birkenau. Chapter 20.
Lale is helped from the truck and dragged into Oberscharführer Hausteck's office.
The two SS officers hold him by an arm each.
We got nothing out of him even after the big Jew had a go, one of them says.
Hausteck turns to Lale, who raises his head.
So, you really didn't know their names, and they didn't shoot you?
No, sir.
Returned you to me, eh? Now you're my problem again.
Yes, sir.
Hausteck addresses the officers.
Take him to Block 31.
He turns to Lale.
We will get some hard work out of you before your number is up. Mark my words.
Lale is dragged from the office. He tries to keep pace with the SS officers.
But halfway across the compound, he gives up and sacrifices the skin on the top of his feet to the gravel. The officers open the door to Block 31 and toss him inside before taking their leave.
Lale lies on the floor exhausted in body and soul. Several inmates approach him cautiously. Two try to help him up, but Lale cries out in pain and they stop. One of the men pulls up Lale's shirt, revealing the large welts across his back and buttocks. More gently this time, they pick him up and place him on a bunk. He soon falls asleep.
I know who this is,
one of the prisoners says.
Who?
Another asks.
It's the Tetoviera. Don't you recognize him? He probably made your number. Yeah, you're right. I wonder who he pissed off. I got extra rations from him when I was in Block 6. He was always handing out food. I don't know about that. I've only been in this block. I pissed someone off the day I arrived.
The men chuckle quietly.
He can't make it to supper. I'll bring him some of mine. He's going to need it tomorrow.
A short while later, Lale is woken by two men, each with a small piece of bread. They offer it to him, and he gratefully accepts.
I've got to get out of here.
The men laugh.
Sure, my friend. You have two options, then. One is quick, the other might take a little longer. And what are they? Well, tomorrow morning you can go outside and throw yourself on the death cart when it comes around. Or you can come and work in the fields with us until you drop or beg them to shoot you. I don't like those options. I'll have to find another way. Good luck, my friend. You better get some rest. You've got a long day ahead of you, especially in your condition.
That night, Lale dreams of his departures from home.
The first time he'd left home, he was a young man full of promise, in search of a future to make his own. He would find a job he enjoyed and could grow in. He would have rich experiences visiting the romantic cities of Europe that he'd read about in books, Paris, Rome, Vienna. Above all, he wanted to find that one person he would fall in love with, shower with affection, and the things his mother had said were important. Flowers, chocolates, his time and attention. His second departure, full of uncertainty and the unknown, rattled him. What lay ahead? He arrived in Prague after a long, emotionally painful journey away from his family. He reported, as instructed, to the relevant government department, and was told to find accommodation nearby, and to report back weekly until his role was decided. On the 16th of April, a month later, he was told to report with his belongings to a local school. There he was housed with a number of young Jewish men from across Slovakia.
Lale prided himself on his appearance, and his living situation did not prevent him from looking his best.
Each day he washed and cleaned his clothes in the school toilet block. He didn't know where he was headed, but wanted to make damn sure he looked his best when he arrived.
After 5 days of sitting around, bored, frightened, mostly bored, Lale and the others were told to gather up their possessions and were marched to the railway station.
They were told nothing of where they were going. A train designed to transport cattle pulled up, and the men were ordered to climb aboard. Some objected, explaining that the filthy wagon insulted their dignity.
Lale watched the response, seeing for the first time his fellow countrymen raise their rifles at Jews and strike the ones who continued protesting. He climbed on board along with all the others. When no one else could be pushed into his wagon, Lale watched as the doors were slammed shut and heard them bolted by members of the Slovakian army, men whose job it should have been to protect him.
Over and over he hears the sound of the doors being slammed and bolted. Slammed and bolted.
The next morning, the two kind prisoners help Lale from the block and stand with him to await roll call. How long has it been since I've stood like this? Numbers. Numbers. Survival is always about your number.
Being ticked off your capo's list tells you that you are still alive.
Lale's number is last on the list, since he is the newest occupant of Block 31.
After a cup of old weak coffee and a thin slice of stale bread, they are marched off towards their labor. In a field between the two camps of Auschwitz and Birkenau, they are made to carry large rocks from one side to the other. When the rocks have all been moved over, they are told to take them back again.
And so the day goes on. Lale thinks of the hundreds of times he has walked the road alongside and seen this activity taking place.
No, I only glimpsed it. I couldn't watch what these men were enduring.
He quickly works out that the SS shoot the last one to arrive with his rock.
Lale needs to use all of his strength. His muscles ache, but his mind stays strong. On one occasion, he is the second last to arrive. When the day ends, those still living gather up the bodies of those slain and carry them back to the camp. Lale is excused from this task. but told he has one day's grace only. Tomorrow, he will have to pull his weight, provided he's still alive.
As they trudge back into Birkenau,
Lale sees Beretsky standing inside the gates. He falls into step beside Lale.
I heard what happened to you.
Lale looks at him.
Beretsky, can you help me with something?
By asking for assistance, he admits to the other men that he is different from them. He knows the officer's name and can ask him for help. Marking himself as friendly with the enemy brings acute shame, but he needs this.
Maybe. What is it?
Beretsky looks uncomfortable.
Can you get a message to Gita?
Do you really want her to know where you are? Isn't it better that she thinks you're already dead?
Just tell her exactly where I am, Block 31, and tell her to tell Silke.
You want her friend to know where you are?
Yes, it's important. She'll understand.
I'll do it if I feel like it. Is it true you had a fortune in diamonds under your mattress?
Did they mention the rubies, emeralds, the Yankee dollars, the British and South African pounds?
Beretsky shakes his head, laughing, slapping Lale painfully on the back as he walks off.
Silke! Gita must tell Silke!
He calls after him. A backward wave of Beretsky's arm dismisses Lale.
Beretsky enters the women's camp as they are lining up for dinner. Silke sees him approach the capo and then point at Gita. The capo beckons Gita with her finger. Silke draws Dana in close as Gita slowly walks over to Beretsky. They cannot hear what he says, but his message causes Gita to cover her face with her hands. She then turns towards her friends and runs back into their arms.
He's alive. Lale is alive, she says. He said I'm to tell you, Silke, that he is in Block 31. Why me? I don't know. But he said Lale had insisted I tell you.
What can she do?
Dana asks. Silke looks away, her mind working feverishly.
I don't know,
says Gita, not in the mood to analyze.
I only know that he is alive.
Silke, what can you do? How can you help?
Dana pleads.
I will think about it, says Silke. He's alive. My love is alive,
Gita repeats. That night, Silke lies in the arms of Schwarzhuber. She can tell he is not yet asleep. She opens her mouth to say something, but is silenced by him retrieving his arm from underneath her.
Are you all right?
She asks, tentatively, fearing he will be suspicious of such an intimate question.
Yes.
There is a softness in his voice she has not heard before. And emboldened, Silke presses on.
I have never said no to you for anything, have I? And I've never asked you for anything before,
she says tentatively.
That's true, he responds.
Can I ask for one thing?
Lale makes it through the next day. He does his bit, helping to carry one of the murdered men back.
He hates himself for having thoughts only of the pain it causes him, with little compassion for the dead man.
What is happening to me?
Step by step, the pain in his shoulders threatens to drag him down.
Fight it. Fight it.
As they enter the camp, Lale's attention is caught by two people standing just beyond the fence that separates the prisoners from the staff quarters. The diminutive Silke stands beside Lagerführer Schwarzhuber. A guard on Lale's side of the fence is talking to them. Lale stops, slackening his grip on the corpse, which causes the prisoner holding the other end of the body to stumble and fall. Lale looks at Silke, who peers back at him before saying something to Schwarzhuber. He nods and points to Lale. Silke and Schwarzhuber walk away as the guard approaches Lale.
Come with me.
Lale rests the legs he's been carrying on the ground and looks for the first time at the dead man's face.
His compassion returns, and he bows his head at this tragic end to yet another life. He gives an apologetic glance to the other man carrying the body and hurries to follow the guard. The other inmates of Block 31 all stare after him.
The guard tells Lale,
I'm instructed to take you to your old room in the gypsy camp.
I know the way.
Suit yourself.
The guard leaves him.
Lale stops outside the gypsy camp, watching the children run around. Several of them look at him, trying to make sense of his return. The Tetoviera, they have been told, is dead. One of them runs to Lale, throwing his arms around his waist, hugging him tight, welcoming him home.
The others join in, and before long, adults are coming out of the block to greet him. Where have you been? They ask. Are you injured? He deflects all their questions.
Nadia is standing at the back of the group. Lale makes eye contact with her.
Pushing his way through the men, women and children, he stops in front of her. With a finger, he wipes a tear from her cheek.
It's good to see you, Nadia. We've missed you. I've missed you.
All Lale can do is nod. He needs to get away quickly before he breaks down in front of everyone.
He rushes to his room, closes the door on the world and lies on his old bed. Chapter 21.
Are you sure you're not a cat?
Lale hears the words and struggles to register where he is. He opens his eyes to find a grinning Beretsky leaning over him.
What?
You must be a cat, because you have more lives than anyone else here.
Lale struggles to sit up.
It was...
Silka, yes, I know. Must be nice to have friends in high places.
I'd gladly give my life for her not to need such friends.
You nearly did give your life. Not that it would have helped her.
Yeah, that's one situation I can't do anything about.
Beretsky laughs.
You really think you run these camps, don't you? Hell, maybe you do. You're still alive and you shouldn't be. How did you get out of Block 11?
I have no idea. When they took me out, I was sure I was headed for the Black Wall. But then I was thrown in a truck. And brought back here.
I've never known anyone to walk away from the Strauss Company. So, well done,
Beretsky says.
That's one piece of history I don't mind making. How come I've got my old room back?
Easy. It comes with the job.
What?
You're the Tetoviera. And all I can say is thank God the eunuch who replaced you was no match.
Haustek is letting me have my job back?
I wouldn't go anywhere near him. He didn't want you back, he wanted you shot. It was Schwarzhuber who had other plans for you.
I need to get my hands on at least some chocolate for Silka.
Tetoviera, don't. You will be watched very closely. Now come on, I'll take you to work.
As they're leaving the room, Lale says,
I'm sorry I wasn't able to get you the nylons you wanted. I'd made arrangements but got derailed.
Well, at least you tried. Anyway, she's not my girlfriend anymore. She dumped me.
Sorry to hear that. I hope it wasn't because of something I suggested you say to her.
I don't think so. She just met someone who is in the same town. Oh, the same country as her.
Lale considers saying something more, but decides to let it drop.
Beretsky leads him out of his block and into the compound where a truckload of men has arrived and a selection is taking place. He smiles inwardly at the sight of Leon working, dropping the tattoo stick, spilling ink.
Beretsky wanders off and Lale approaches Leon from behind.
Need a hand?
Leon turns around, knocking a bottle of ink over as he grasps Lale by the hand, shaking it vigorously, overjoyed.
"It's so good to see you," he cries. "Believe me, it's good to be back. How are you? Still pissing sitting down? Otherwise I'm okay. So much better now that you're here. Let's get on with it then. Looks like they're sending quite a few our way." "Does Geeta know you're back?" Leon asks. "I think so. It was her friend Silke who got me out. The one who..." "Yes. I'll try to see them tomorrow. Give me one of those sticks. I'd better not give them any excuse to throw me back where I was."
Leon holds out his tattoo stick as he rummages around in Lale's bag for another one. Together, they begin work, tattooing the newest residents of Birkenau. The next afternoon, Lale waits outside the administration building as the girls leave work. Dana and Geeta don't see him until he stands right in front of them, blocking their path. A moment passes before they react. Then both girls throw their arms around him and hug him tightly. Dana cries. No tears come from Geeta. Lale releases them and takes each by the hand.
"Both still beautiful," he tells them.
Geeta smacks him on the arm with her free hand.
"I thought you were dead. Again. I thought I'd never see you again." "Me too," says Dana. "But I'm not. Thanks to you and to Silke, I'm not. I'm here with the two of you where I should be."
"But..."
cries Geeta.
Lale pulls her towards him and holds her securely. Dana kisses him on the cheek.
"I'll leave you two. It's so good to see you, Lale. I thought Geeta would die of a broken heart if you didn't come back soon."
"Thank you, Dana,"
says Lale.
"You're a good friend to both of us."
She walks off, the smile not leaving her face.
Hundreds of prisoners mill around the compound as Lale and Geeta stand there, not knowing what to do next.
"Close your eyes,"
Lale says.
"What?" "Close them and count to 10.
"But..."
"Just do it."
One eye at a time, Geeta does as she's told. She counts to 10, then opens them.
"I don't understand."
"I'm still here. I'll never leave you again. Come on. We have to keep moving," she tells him.
They walk towards the women's camp. With no bribe for the capo, Lale can't risk Geeta being laid back. They lean gently in towards each other.
"I don't know how much longer I can stand this." "It can't last forever, my darling. Just hang in there. Please hang in there. We'll have the rest of our lives together."
"But..."
"No buts. I promised you we'd leave this place and make a life together."
"How can we?
We can't know what tomorrow will bring. Look at what just happened to you." "I'm here with you now, aren't I?"
"Lale."
"Leave it, Geeta."
"Will you tell me what happened to you? Where you've been?"
Lale shakes his head.
"No. I'm back here with you now. What matters is what I've told you many times, that we will leave this place and have a free life together. Trust me, Geeta."
"I do."
Lale likes the sound of that.
"One day, you will say those two little words to me under different circumstances. In front of a rabbi, surrounded by our family and friends."
Geeta giggles and lays her head briefly on his shoulder as they reach the entrance to the women's camp.
As Lale walks back to his block, two youths approach and walk alongside him.
"You're the Tetoviera?"
"Who's asking?"
says Lale.
"We hear you might be able to get us some extra food."
"Whoever told you that was mistaken."
"We can pay,"
one of them says, opening his clenched fist to reveal a small but perfect diamond.
Lale grits his teeth.
"Go on. Take it. If you can get us anything, we would really appreciate it, mister."
"What block are you in?"
9.
"How many lives does a cat have?"
The next morning, Lale hangs around the main gates, bag in hand. Twice, SS approach him.
Politische Abteilung, he says on both occasions, and is left alone. But he is more apprehensive than he used to be.
Victor and Yuri break from the line of men entering the camp and greet Lale warmly.
Do we ask where you've been?
Victor asks.
Best not,
Lale replies.
You're back in business?
Not like before. I'm scaling it down, okay? Just a little extra food, if you can. No more nylons.
Sure. Welcome back,
Victor says with enthusiasm.
Lale extends his hand. Victor takes it, and the diamond exchanges hands.
Down payment. See you tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Yuri looks on.
It's good to see you again,
he says quietly.
You too, Yuri. Have you grown?
Yeah, I reckon I have.
Say,
said Lale,
you wouldn't happen to have any chocolate on you? I really need to spend some time with my girl.
Yuri takes a block out of his bag, handing it to Lale with a wink. Lale heads straight to the women's camp and block 29. The capo is where she always is, soaking up the sun. She watches Lale approach.
Tato Vieira, good to see you again,
she says.
Have you lost weight? You're looking good,
Lale says with the merest hint of irony.
You haven't been around for a while.
I'm back now,
he hands her the chocolate.
I'll get her for you.
He watches her walk towards the administration building and speak to a female SS officer outside. Then he enters the block and sits, waiting for Gita to walk through the door. He doesn't have to wait long before she appears. She closes the door and walks toward him. He stands and leans on the bunk post. He fears he will struggle to say the words he needs to. He arranges his face into a mask of self-control.
To make love, whenever and wherever we want. We may not be free, but I choose now, and I choose here. What do you say?
She throws herself into his arms, smothering his face with kisses.
As they begin to undress, Lale stops and holds Gita's hands.
You asked me if I would tell you where I disappeared to, and I said no, remember?
Yes.
Well, I still don't want to talk about it, but there is something I can't keep from you. Now, you're not to be frightened, and I am all right, but I did take a little bit of a beating.
Show me.
Lale slides his shirt off slowly and turns his back to her.
She says nothing but runs her fingers ever so softly over the welts on his back. Her lips follow and he knows nothing more needs to be said. Their lovemaking is slow and gentle. He feels tears well up and fights them back. This is the deepest love he's ever felt. Chapter 22.
Lale spends long hot summer days with Gita, or with thoughts of her.
Their workload hasn't diminished, though. Quite the opposite. Thousands of Hungarian Jews are now arriving in Auschwitz and Birkenau every week. As a result, unrest breaks out in both the men's and women's camps.
Lale has worked out why. The higher the number on a person's arm, the less respect they receive from everyone else.
Every time another nationality arrives in large numbers, turf wars ensue. Gita has told him about the women's camp. The Slovakian girls, who have been in there the longest, resent the Hungarian girls, who refuse to accept that they aren't entitled to the same small perks that the Slovakians have worked hard to negotiate. She and her friends feel that surviving what they have should count for something. They have, for example, obtained casual clothing from the Canada. No more blue and white striped pajamas for them, and they are not prepared to share. The SS do not take sides when fights break out. All involved are punished with an equal lack of mercy. Denied their meager food rations, they might be flogged, Sometimes just the one blow with a rifle butt or swagger stick. But at other times they are beaten savagely, while their fellow prisoners are forced to look on. Geeta and Dana keep well clear of any fights. Geeta has enough issues dealing with petty jealousies over her job in the administration building, her friendship with the seemingly protected Silka, and of course visits from her boyfriend, the Tatoviera.
Lale is largely immune to the camp disputes.
Working with Leon and only a handful of other prisoners alongside the SS, he is removed from the plight of the thousands of starving men who must work and fight and live and die together. Living among the Romani also gives him a sense of security and belonging. He realizes he has settled into a pattern of life that is comfortable relative to the conditions of the majority. He works when he has to, spends whatever time he can steal with Geeta, plays with the Romani children, talks to their parents, mostly the younger men, but also the older women. He loves how they care for everyone, not only their biological family. He doesn't connect so well with the older men, who mostly sit around not engaging with the children, the young adults, or even the older women. When he looks at them, he often thinks about his own father.
Late one night, Lale is woken by yelling SS, barking dogs, screaming women and children.
He opens his door and looks out to see the men, women and children in his block being forced from the building. He watches until the last woman clutching an infant is shoved brutally out into the night. He follows them all outside and stands, stunned, as all around him the other gypsy blocks are also emptied. Thousands of people are being herded onto nearby trucks. The compound is lit up and dozens of SS and their dogs corral the mob, shooting at anyone who doesn't respond immediately to the instruction, "Get on the truck!"
Lale stops a passing officer he recognizes.
"Where are you taking them?" he asks.
"You want to join them, Tatoviera?" the man responds, walking on.
Lale sinks into the shadows, scanning the crowd.
He sees Nadia and runs to her.
"Nadia," he pleads, "don't go."
She forces a brave smile.
"I don't have a choice, Lale. I go where my people go. Goodbye, my friend. It's been..."
An officer pushes her along before she can finish. Lale stands paralyzed, watching until the last person has been loaded onto the trucks.
The trucks drive off and slowly he walks back into the eerily silent block. He goes back to bed. Sleep will not come.
In the morning, Lale, distraught, joins Leon and they work furiously as new transports arrive. Mengele is scanning the silent rows, making his way slowly towards the tattooist's station. Leon's hands tremble at his approach. Lale tries to give him a reassuring look, but the bastard who has mutilated him is only a few feet away. Mengele stops and watches them work. Occasionally he peers closely at a tattoo, increasing Lale and Leon's agitation. His deathly smirk never leaves his face. He attempts eye contact with Lale, who never raises his eyes above the level of the arm he's working on.
"Tatoviera? Tatoviera?" Mengele says, leaning over the table. "Maybe today I will take you."
He tilts his head, curiously, seeming to enjoy Lale's discomfort. Then, having had his fun, he ambles away. Something light lands on Lale's head, and he looks up. Ash is belching from the nearby crematorium. He starts to tremble and drops his tattoo stick. Leon tries to steady him.
"Lale, what is it? What's wrong?"
Lale's scream is choked by a sob.
"You bastards. You fucking bastards."
Leon grips Lale's arm, trying to get him to control himself as Mengele looks their way and starts to walk back over. Lale is seeing red. He is out of control.
"Nadia.
He tries desperately to rein himself in as Mengele arrives. He feels as though he might vomit. Mengele's breath is in his face.
Is everything all right here?
Yes, here, doctor, everything's fine,
Leon answers shakily.
Leon bends down and picks up Lale's stick.
Just a broken stick. We'll fix it and be right back to work,
Leon continues.
You don't look well, Toto Vieira. Would you like me to take a look at you?
Mengele asks.
Fine.
Just a broken stick.
Lale coughs.
He keeps his head down, turns away and tries to get back to work.
Toto Vieira!
Mengele barks.
Lale turns back towards Mengele, jaw clenched, head still low. Mengele has unholstered his pistol. He holds it limply at his side.
I could have shot you for turning away from me.
He raises the weapon, pointing it at Lale's forehead.
Look at me. I could shoot you right now. What would you say to that?
Lale raises his head, but moves his gaze to the doctor's forehead, refusing to look into his eyes.
Yes. Herr Doctor. I'm sorry, it won't happen again, Herr Doctor,
he mutters.
Get back to work. You're holding things up,
Mengele barks, and again walks off.
Lale looks at Leon and points to the ash now falling all around them.
They emptied the gypsy camp last night.
Leon hands Lale his tattoo stick, before going back to work himself in silence. Lale looks up, searching for the sun to shine down on him. But it is concealed by ash and smoke.
That evening he returns to his block, which is now occupied by people that he and Leon marked earlier. He shuts himself away in his room. He doesn't want to make friends. Not tonight. Not ever. He wants only silence in his block. Chapter 23.
For weeks, Lale and Gita's time together is spent mostly in silence, as she tries in vain to console him. He has told her what happened, and while she understands his distress, she doesn't share it to the same degree. It isn't her fault she never got to know Lale's other family.
She had delighted in hearing his stories of the children, and their attempts to play, with no toys, kicking balls made out of snow or debris, seeing who could jump the highest to touch the timber slats on their building, mostly just playing chase.
She tries to get him to talk about his biological family, but Lale has become stubborn and is refusing to say anything more until she shares information about her own life. Gita doesn't know how to break the spell of Lale's grief. They have both withstood, for more than 2.5 years, the worst of humanity.
But this is the first time she's seen Lale sink to this depth of depression.
What about the thousands of our people?
She yells at him one day.
What about what you have seen at Auschwitz with Mengele? Do you know how many people have been through these two camps, do you?
Lale does not reply.
I see the cards with the names and ages, babies, grandparents. I see their names and their numbers. I can't even count that high.
Lale doesn't need Gita to remind him of the number of people who have passed through the camps.
He has marked their skin himself. He looks at her. She is studying the ground. He realizes that while to him they were just numbers, to Gita they were names. Her job means that she knows more about these people than he does. She knows their names and ages, and he realizes that this knowledge will forever haunt her.
I'm sorry. You're right, he says. Any death is one too many. I'll try not to be so gloomy.
I want you to be yourself with me, but it's been going on for too long, Lale, and one day is a long time for us.
Smart and beautiful. I'll never forget them, you know. I couldn't love you if you did. They were your family, I know that. I know it's a strange thing for me to say, but you will honor them by staying alive, surviving this place, and telling the world what happened here.
Lale leans over to kiss her, his heart weighted by love and sorrow.
A massive explosion rings out, shaking the ground beneath them. From their spot behind the administration block, they jump to their feet and run to the front of the building. A second explosion makes them look towards the nearby crematorium, where smoke rises and pandemonium is breaking out. The Sonderkommando workers are running from the building, most of them towards the fence that surrounds the camp. Gunfire erupts from the top of the crematorium.
Lale looks up and sees Sonderkommando up there, shooting wildly.
The SS fire heavy machine guns in retaliation. Within minutes, they have put an end to the shooting.
What's happening?
Gita says.
I don't know. We need to get indoors.
Bullets strike the ground around them as the SS take aim at anyone in their sights.
Lale pulls Gita up hard against the building. Another loud explosion.
That's Crematorium 4. Someone's blowing it up. We have to get out of here.
Prisoners run from the administration building and are gunned down.
I have to get you back to your block. It's the only place you'll be safe.
An announcement on the loudspeakers. All prisoners return to your blocks. You will not be fired upon if you go now.
Go, quickly. I'm frightened. Take me with you, she cries. You'll be safer in your own block tonight. They're bound to do a roll call. My darling, you can't get caught outside your block.
She hesitates.
Go now. Stay in your block tonight and go to work as normal tomorrow. You must not give them any reason to look for you. You must wake up tomorrow.
She takes a deep breath and turns to run.
In parting, Lale says,
I'll find you tomorrow. I love you.
That night, Lale breaks his rule and joins the men, mostly Hungarians, in his block to find out what he can about the afternoon's events.
It appears some of the women working in an ammunition factory nearby had been smuggling tiny amounts of gunpowder back to Birkenau, pushed up into their fingernails. They had been getting it to the Sonderkommando, who made crude grenades out of sardine tins. They had also been stockpiling weapons, including small arms, knives, and axes.
The men in Lale's block also tell him of rumors about a general uprising, which they wanted to join but didn't believe was meant to happen on this day.
They have heard that the Russians are advancing, and the uprising was planned to coincide with their arrival to assist them in liberating the camp.
Lale admonishes himself for not having made friends with his block companions sooner.
Not having this knowledge nearly got Gita killed. He questions the men extensively on what they know about the Russians and when they are likely to arrive. The replies are vague, but are enough to provoke slight optimism. It has been months since the American plane flew overhead. The transports have kept coming.
Lale has seen no lessening of the dedication of the Nazi machine to the extermination of Jews and other groups.
Still, these latest arrivals have a more recent connection with the outside world. Perhaps liberation is coming. He is determined to tell Gita what he has learned and ask her to be vigilant in the office, to glean any information she can. At last, a glimmer of hope. Chapter 24.
Autumn is bitterly cold. Many don't survive. Lale and Gita hold on to their glimmer of hope.
Gita lets her blockmates know of the rumors about the Russians and encourages them to believe that they can outlive Auschwitz. As 1945 begins, temperatures plummet further. Gita cannot stop morale ebbing away. Warm coats from the Canada cannot keep out the chill and fear of another year captive in the forgotten world of Auschwitz-Birkenau. The transports slow. This has a perverse effect on those prisoners who work for the SS, particularly the Sonderkommando.
Having less work to do puts them in danger of execution. As for Lale, He has built up some reserves, but his supply of new currency is much diminished.
And the locals, including Victor and Yuri, are no longer coming in to work. Construction has halted.
Lale has heard promising news that two of the crematoria damaged in the explosions by the resistance fighters are not going to be repaired. For the first time in Lale's memory, more people are leaving Birkenau than are entering.
Geeta and her co-workers take turns processing those being shipped out, supposedly to other concentration camps. Snow is thick on the ground on a late January day when
Lale is told that Leon has gone.
He asks Beretsky as they walk together if he knows where to.
Beretsky offers no answer and warns Lale that he too might find himself on a transport out of Birkenau. But Lale can still make his way mostly unobserved, not required to report at roll call each morning and evening.
He hopes this will keep him at the camp, but he doesn't have the same confidence that Geeta will remain. Beretsky laughs his insidious laugh.
The news of Leon's probable death taps into reserves of pain Lale did not know he still had.
You see your world reflected in a mirror. But I have another mirror, Lale says.
Beretsky stops. He looks at Lale, and Lale holds his stare.
I look into mine, says Lale, and I see a world that will bring yours down.
Beretsky smiles. And do you think you will live to see that happen?
Yes, I do.
Beretsky places his hand on his holstered pistol.
I could shatter your mirror right now.
You won't do that.
You have been out in the cold too long, Tatoviera. Go and get warm and come to your senses.
Beretsky walks away.
Lale watches him leave. He knows that if they were ever to meet on a dark night on equal terms, it would be he who would walk away. Lale would have no qualms about taking this man's life. He would have the last word. One morning in late January, Geeta stumbles through the snow towards Lale. Running towards his block somewhere, he's told her never to come near.
There's something happening,
she cries.
What do you mean?
DSS, they're acting strange. They seem to be panicking.
Where's Dana?
Lale asks with concern.
I don't know.
Find her, go to your block, and stay there until I come.
I want to stay with you.
Lale pulls her off him, holding her at arm's length.
Hurry, Geeta. Find Dana and go to your block. I'll come and find you when I can. I need to find out what's going on. There haven't been any new arrivals for weeks now. This could be the beginning of the end.
She turns and moves reluctantly away from Lale.
He reaches the administration building and cautiously enters the office, so familiar to him from years of obtaining supplies and instructions. Inside, it's chaos. SS are yelling at frightened workers who cower at their desks as the SS pull books, cards, and paperwork from them.
An SS worker hurries past Lale, her hands full of papers and entry books. He bumps into her and she spills what she is carrying.
I'm sorry, here, let me help you.
They both bend down to gather up the papers.
Are you all right?
He says as gently as possible.
I think you may be out of a job, Tetoviera.
Why? What's going on?
She leans into Lale, whispering now.
We are emptying the camp, starting tomorrow.
Lale's heart leaps.
What can you tell me, please?
The Russians. They're nearly here.
Lale runs from the building to the women's camp. The door to block 29 is shut. No one stands guard outside. Entering, Lale finds the women huddled together at the back. Even Silke is here. They gather around him, frightened and full of questions.
All I can tell you is that the SS appear to be destroying records, Lale says.
One of them told me the Russians are nearby.
He withholds the news that the camp is going to be emptying out the next day because he doesn't want to cause further alarm by admitting that he doesn't know where to.
What do you think the SS are going to do with us?
Dana asks.
I don't know. Let's hope they will run off and let the Russians liberate the camp. I'll try to find out more. I'll come back and tell you what I've learned. Don't leave the block. There are bound to be some trigger-happy guards out there.
He takes Dana by both hands.
Dana, I don't know what's going to happen. But while I have the chance, I want to tell you how much I will always be grateful to you for being Gita's friend. I know you have kept her going many times when she has wanted to give up.
They embrace. Lale kisses her on the forehead and then hands her over to Gita. He turns to Silke and Ivana and wraps them both in a bear hug.
To Silke, he says, You are the bravest person I have ever met. You must not carry any guilt for what has happened here. You are an innocent. Remember that.
In between sobs, she replies,
I did what I had to do to survive. If I hadn't, someone else would have suffered at the hands of that pig.
I owe my life to you, Silke, and I will never forget that.
He turns to Gita.
Don't say anything, she says. Don't you dare say a word.
Gita.
No. You don't get to say anything to me other than you'll see me tomorrow. That's all I want to hear from you.
Lale looks at these young women and realizes that there is nothing left to say. They were brought to this camp as girls, and now, not one of them yet having reached the age of 21, they are broken, damaged young women. He knows they will never grow to be the women they were meant to be. Their futures have been derailed, and there will be no getting back on the same track. The visions they once had of themselves as daughters, sisters, wives and mothers, workers, travelers and lovers, will forever be tainted by what they've witnessed and endured. He leaves them to go in search of Beretsky and information about what the next day will bring. The officer is nowhere to be found.
Lale trudges back to his block, where he finds the Hungarian men anxious and worried. He tells them what he knows, but it's of little comfort.
In the night, SS officers enter every block in the women's camp and paint a bright red slash down the back of each girl's coat. Once again, the women are marked for whatever fate awaits them. Gita, Dana, Silke, and Ivana take comfort in all of them being marked alike. Whatever happens tomorrow will happen to all of them. Together they will live or die. Sometime during the night, Lale finally falls asleep. He is woken by a great commotion. It takes a few moments for the noises to penetrate his groggy brain. Memories of the night the Romani were taken flood back.
What is this new horror?
The sound of rifle shots jolts him fully awake. Putting on his shoes and wrapping a blanket around his shoulders, he cautiously goes outside. Thousands of women prisoners are being corralled into rows. There is obvious confusion, as if neither guards nor prisoners know quite what is expected.
The SS pay Lale no attention as he walks quickly up and down the rows of women who bunch together, from the cold and in fear of what's to come.
Snow continues to fall. Running is impossible. Lale watches as a dog snaps at the legs of one of the women and brings her to the ground. A friend reaches down to help her to her feet, but the SS officer holding the dog draws his pistol and shoots the fallen woman.
Lale
hurries on, looking down the rows, searching, desperate. Finally he sees her. Gita and her friends are being pushed towards the main gates, clinging to each other, but he can't see Silke among them, or anywhere in the sea of faces. He focuses back on Gita. She has her head down, and Lale can tell by the movement of her shoulders that she is sobbing.
At last she is crying, but I can't comfort her.
Dana spots him. She pulls Gita towards the outside of their row and points Lale out to her. Gita finally looks up and sees him. Their eyes meet, hers wet, pleading, his full of sorrow. Focused on Gita, Lale doesn't see the SS officer. He is unable to move out of the way of the rifle that swings at him, connecting with his face and sending him to his knees. Geeta and Dana both scream and try to force their way back through the column of women. To no avail. They are swept up in the tide of moving bodies.
Lale
struggles to his feet, blood streaming down his face from a large gash above his right eye. Frantic now, he plunges into the moving crowd, searching each row of distraught women. As he gets near the gates, he sees her again, within arm's length. A guard steps in front of him and pushes the muzzle of his rifle into Lale's chest.
Geeta!
He screams.
Lale's
world is spinning. He looks up at the sky, which seems only to be getting darker as the morning breaks. Above the noise of screaming guards and barking dogs, he hears her.
Furman! My name is Geeta Furman!
Sinking to his knees in front of the unmoving guard, he shouts,
I love you!
Nothing comes back.
Lale remains on his knees.
The guard moves away. The cries of the women have stopped. The dogs cease barking. The gates of Birkenau are shut.
Lale kneels in the snow, which continues to fall heavily.
Blood from the wound in his forehead covers his face. He's locked in, alone. He's failed. An officer comes over to him.
You'll freeze to death. Come on, go back to your block.
He reaches a hand down and pulls Lale to his feet. An act of kindness from the enemy at the 11th hour. Cannon fire and explosions wake Lale the next morning. He rushes outside with the Hungarians to be greeted by panicked SS and a chaos of prisoners and captors on the move, seemingly oblivious to each other. The main gates are wide open. Hundreds of prisoners walk through, unchallenged. Dazed, weak from malnourishment, some stumble around and then choose to return to their block to escape the cold.
Lale walks out the gates he has been through hundreds of times before on the way to Auschwitz.
A train is standing nearby, belching smoke into the sky ready to leave. Guards and dogs begin rounding up men and pushing them towards the train.
Lale
gets caught up in the scrum and finds himself scrambling on board. The gates of his wagon are slammed closed. He pushes his way to the side and peers out. Hundreds of prisoners still wander around aimlessly. As the train pulls away, he sees SS open fire on those who remain. He stands, staring through the slats of the wagon, through the snow falling heavily, mercilessly, as Birkenau disappears. Chapter 25. Geeta and her friends are on the march with thousands of other women from Birkenau and Auschwitz, trudging along a narrow track through ankle-deep snow. As carefully as they can, Geeta and Dana search the rows, all too aware that any straggling is dealt with by a bullet. They ask 100 times,
Have you seen Silke? Have you seen Ivana?
The answer is always the same. The women try to support each other by linking arms. At seemingly random times, they are halted and told to take a rest. Despite the cold, they sit in the snow, anything to give their feet some relief. Many remain there when the order to move on comes, dead or dying, unable to take another step. Day becomes night, and still they march. Their numbers dwindle, which only makes it harder to escape the watchful eye of the SS. During the night, Dana drops to her knees. She can go on no longer. Geeta stops with her, and for a while they are unseen, screened by other women. Dana keeps telling Geeta to go on, to leave her. Geeta protests. She would rather die here with her friend, in a field somewhere in Poland. 4 young girls offer to help carry Dana. Dana will not hear of it. She tells them to take Geeta and go. As an SS officer advances on them, the 4 girls pull Geeta to her feet and drag her with them. Geeta looks back at the officer who has stopped beside Dana, but moves on without drawing his pistol. No shot rings out. Clearly he thinks she is already dead. The girls continue to drag Geeta. They will not let her go as she attempts to break free and get back to Dana. Through the dark, the women stumble.